This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Do you know, Patrick, what that disturbing glow is from my studio right now? My bare legs, my friend. A lovely color of alabaster after 5 months of being in long pants. I'm wearing my shorts today. It is gorgeous outside.
I think the Arctic is more colorful than your legs.
It's like a topographical map of Greenland. good to be with you today. I hope you're having some fun outside. It is absolutely spectacular right now, and it's melt, you bastards, melt. That's what I say as the snow is disappearing in quickly, and it's gonna be warmer tomorrow. So yeah, things are looking pretty good here in Minnesota right now. I do hope you have a wonderful afternoon. Coming up here a little bit later, we've got Patrick Cooligan. We're going to be joining Brett here to talk about things with the Minnesota Reformer. But right now, let's get into our Democrat of the day for today. This is running for the Minnesota 8 seat. This is a U.S. House seat, taking on Pete Stauber, or as I like to affectionately call him, Stubby. Needless to say, we need to get him out because he's just a lapdog for Trump at this point. Ernest Joseph Oppegard Peltier III is currently running as the DFL candidate for Minnesota 8, and he's kind enough to join us today to talk about his campaign. It's Joey, correct?
Hello, and yeah, it is Joey for short. My friends and family call me that, and Miigwech, thank you for the space on AM 950, the progressive voice. Hey, Matt, how you doing? It's 50 degrees in Bemidji. It's gorgeous out. I agree. My husband's coming home here in a moment. He's going to be switching into his short.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready for that Norwegian sight.
Oh, yes, it is. It's disturbing. It is a very pale-legged society for a few days, that's for sure. Now, you might, if you're a listener here, the regular listener to the station, you might actually recognize Joey here from Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake. You are deciding to run for that Minnesota 8 race. Now, that district, after the redistricting, got huge. It is part of the metro area up on the northeast side of town. It's part of the metro area, stretches all the way up to the north, the Iron Range, North Shore, all the way out towards Bemidji. It is a massive district.
And it includes all seven of the Anishinaabe tribes
Nice.
Of Minnesota, and I'm excited for that. As your listeners know, they've heard me for years now on AM 950, that, you know, I worked with the Rock the Vote Native style a few years ago. I've canvassed all of our indigenous country with all of our canvassers. We rocked it out hard, and we pulled out over 9,000 new indigenous voters. So I'm completely confident that we have a strong campaign, and we have three strong issues that we support and champion within our campaign, and that's Medicare for All, legalized cannabis, and expanding Social Security.
Well, I mean, and none of those are. Why not? The truth is, 10 years ago, those might have been extreme issues. Now, those are mainstream because most people agree with all of those issues at this point.
Yes, they poll actually with the majority of Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and they impact all of us. You know, you can't get away from health care debt. You just can't. And when we change over to a single payer system that originally Barack Obama ran on, you know, it eliminates our debt, and there's no such thing as medical bankruptcy anymore. And You know, I come from a single parent home, and we went through our medical bankruptcy when I was 16 years old. You know, that impacted my ability to get a school loan. I actually had to ask my grandmother to co-sign for my student loan because my mother's personal debt Her credit limit was to the max.
Well, for me, I'll give you a story. How about this? I had a kid that was got injured. We're in the hospital. We're in the ambulance going to the hospital. As we get there, the guy looks at us and says, "Do you have a wallet on you?" And I said, "Yeah, why?" He said, "You're just going to need it." And he just kind of, you could tell by his tone that he's like, "I don't approve of this, but I just want to make sure you're prepared for this." We got in the hospital. They wheeled my child away, and there's a person that's like, "Can I talk to you for a quick second? You know, do you have insurance?" "You do? Okay, can I get that information right now? Also, can I get a credit card?" And you're like, "Okay, I want to go in and see my kid, and here is basically a cashier trying to get a payment." And I said, this is not a healthy healthcare system that is in existence. And right now, we it's gotten a little bit better with the Affordable Care Act, but it's nowhere near where we need to be with the Medicare for All. And if anything gives us the argument that that's a good idea, just look at the last freaking 2 years, the pandemic. Uh-oh. My goodness. I mean, especially, I mean, you are going to run for a U.S. House seat that has a lot of rural hospitals. The rural hospitals were completely overwhelmed because they have been cost-cutting and cost-cutting and cost-cutting, and caring for the community was not on their horizon when this whole thing started.
Correct. And, you know, that's a lot to do with folks not being able to go in on a regular basis, so not being able to, you know, fully fund those hospitals when we need them. You know, we have that stuckness, you know, where you paralyze yourself when you're not feeling good, maybe broke your finger, and you're like, "Oh my God, can I go into the hospital? Can I afford this debt?" Like, I have insurance. I had insurance, and I went in, and I'm still paying on all the extra co-fees and the extra payments to the labs and whatnot. And I get an email every month, "Your payments due, pay up." Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, we have conditions that follow us throughout our whole entire life. I struggle with stomach issues, and every time I get a flare up, I'm worried. You know, do I go in? Can I afford going in? Can I afford another year doing payments? Is there any foreseeable things I can think about that might have me not go in? Like, do I need new tires? Do I need a new battery? This winter was hard on our cars. You know, we already had to replace a battery. We up north, we live in a struggle. We're in desperation. You know, we're stuck with the same wages from all these mega out-of-state corporations that run our small little towns, McDonald's, Walmart, Dollar General. And there's not much industry up here. You know, as a congressman, I'm thinking about jobs. You know, I have been a union member. I grew up in a union family, married into a union family, and, you know, one of my big things is jobs. And I'm thinking, how do we get jobs up north? And I look at what our tribes are doing. They're doing an amazing job providing, long-term careers for our community members. Bob Blake over in Red Lake doing polar bear, you know, he provides so many jobs for Red Lake and the surrounding communities. You know, when a tribe brings in a new job, it's not just tribal members that get those jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, Bemidji, I live in Bemidji, surrounding three tribes, Red Lake, White Earth, and Leech Lake. And, you know, this small little town that I live in, that I love, that is my home, you know, it is based on the three tribal economic or industry. And I can't imagine, you know, any congressman or any legislative person coming down the ticket running in the 8th and not understanding that our indigenous nations mm-hmm. are huge providers in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. And if you're not running on indigenous issues in the 8th, you're not going to win.
Well,
a huge thing with our turnout in 2020. You know, we didn't win up in the 8th. Well, our the current line for the 8th, you know, we didn't win up north. We lost a lot of seats. We lost over in the 7th, you know, Colin Peterson. We've been running that same type of campaign over and over again. And that doesn't provide any issues. That they're not talking about the policies, and they're not pushing those policies. Honored that we have Ilhan Omar in this state. Oh, the the negative feedback she gets for being a strong, strong leader. Mm-hmm. She's one of my inspirations. Sorry, go on.
Well, I was going to say let's talk a little bit about the district itself, because you know it is once again nice to have the Native Americans united in one district. You have Duluth there, you have the North Shore, you have the Iron Range. You also have, you know, suburban Minneapolis, St. Paul. Talk about applying what you know to all those areas.
We need jobs. What I was going on before, mm-hmm. you know, there is a surge of low-wage jobs in the North. That's a lot to do with out-of-state companies coming in. We need actual industry jobs here. And, you know, we're looking at federal funding for grant programs to help local business owners start, like Bob Blake is doing in Red Lake, start mm-hmm. solar companies and start hemp manufacturing facilities, adding on to the co-ops that are starting that movement already. And we need that cooperation across the eighth to build each other up. We need to be good neighbors to each other. We need to unite not just as the seven Anishinaabe tribes. We need to unite as friends, allies, neighbors, and family, because we're all related.
I've
been living up in this area for so long. You know, we're all related.
You bring up legalizing marijuana. It is an issue. It's I mean, how many states now are legal? I mean, it's kind of almost comical that, you know, almost like Sunday liquor sales. You know, it's like, okay, why are these laws still on the books? I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, if it's something that's legal, I have a very hard time throwing the book at someone when they can go, you know, a few states over and buy legal marijuana and not have any consequences, and here they're going to throw the book at them. It's long overdue, I think, at this point, and very short-sighted of the current leadership that we have, that marijuana has not been legalized here in the state of Minnesota.
Agreed, and it's shameful that that stalled out in the Senate for the Minnesota State Senate. You know, I'm looking at what currently is going on over in D.C., and Congress just revoked the legalization of cannabis in D.C., so that's not going to go very well with the voters over in D.C. That really impact the vote over there. And as for here up north, you know, I look at our family members. I currently have a family member that has a court date tomorrow that I'll be attending for cannabis-related crimes. He's looking at $200 to $400. Money's tight up here. That's a lot of money. And then he's also looking at potentially losing his job, you know. Businesses have policies that you have cannabis-related crimes, drug-related crimes. They don't care. They don't decipher which one is which, and they let you go. You lose your health insurance. You lose your job, your ways of making a living, and you have to look for another job. And that's where these out-of-state corporations fly right in and, you know, pick up our labor. We need industry up here.
Well, and you need the right kind of industry. I have often, we talk about the Line 3, and that's an abomination. It should not be there. It's the mentality.
You mean that short-term job?
Yeah, exactly. No long-term jobs, no nothing there. And the you know, let's face it, they're going to pollute the living daylights out of northern Minnesota, and you know, the same Republicans who pushed this that said it's never going to pollute are going to be the ones saying, I guess we have to clean it up now. The reality is that there's the argument they make is that if the only jobs are there are a sulfur mine on the by the Boundary Waters or the Line 3, that those are the only jobs. And the reality is that's, first of all, you're insanely short-sighted as far as what you can bring in as far as industry. But as well, it's a loaded argument, because then you say, well, if it's no jobs or the sulfur mine, I'm for the sulfur mine. Well, you know, why don't you bring in, you know, I don't know, manufacturing base, computer manufacturing, some sort of Silicon Valley base thing. Why don't you bring up broadband so that you can bring on all sorts of industries up into the Iron Range, where all the workers can get work. I think that's one of the arguments the Republicans have used. It's an either-or situation. And the reality is it's incredibly short-sighted, because when it looks at industry, there's a lot of ways you can develop a lot of different industries over that entire district.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the mindset that they don't want to walk and chew gum at the same time. We can. You know, as leaders, we should be doing multiple different things at once and advocating for multiple different things at once. It's not logical to just be like, it's one or the other. That's the whole transition with the green transition. It's not one or the other. We're transitioning off. It's going to take a period. You know, that's what we look at the Green New Deal at. I was just at a hemp conference a couple weeks ago, and, you know, I didn't know this, but we're making electrical capacitors out of hemp, from the biogel within the capacitor to the components inside the capacitor. The only thing that wasn't biodegradable is the aluminum casing, and that can be made into being reusable or recycled.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. It really is.
And those are the type of jobs that we need to invest in. Things that don't have a negative impact on our environment and positively impact our local communities. We can have a whole bunch of manufacturing plants that make these capacitors, because capacitors are in everything. And could you see that many digikeys floating up and down the 8th? That would be beautiful. Mm-hmm. That would put our tech sector to work up here. You know, my husband, he actually has a 5-year degree in information technology, and he's working as a barista. Not many jobs up here for tech. And that's something he could do. That's something he'd, you know, that'd fulfill his heart, being to play with little gadgets and gizmos.
Let's, if we have time, let's take a shot at Stauber. I thoroughly enjoy doing. Of course, he voted against the infrastructure bill, but boy, oh boy, that doesn't stop them. Their current argument is, even though I voted against it, I put all that stuff in there. So it's in there because of me, even though I voted against it. And it's just garbage. They are just the party of no, and now they're trying to figure out some way to sell Democratic successes as their own. And that's just the epitome of failed leadership.
You know, he is a corporate candidate either way. He's going to do what his big donors say. I have no interest in fighting the man. He's not worth my time. I'm there to represent our communities. And, you know, just the very fact that he has lobbyist money from weapons manufacturers, he shouldn't be a congressman. You know, there is a huge conflict of interest, and we're in the middle of a really intense military engagement right now. And it's scary to realize how much big corporate has a hold on the decision makings of these people. I like to quote, like, an elder of mine that I feel very close to, who just recently passed away, and that's Mike Gravel. And he says, "These people frighten me." And let alone, he was referring to the 08 presidential candidates for the Dems. But, you know, I relate that to all corporate candidates. These people frighten me. And I'm looking at Pelosi. I'm looking at the current Stock Divestment Act. I can't exactly remember what it's called. But it's simply the conflict of interest between leaders of Congress and their investments within the stock market. And right now they're pushing that, okay, we're going to divide all these different industries into brackets, so you can sign on to a bracket and, like, it'd be all weapons manufacturers or all fossil fuel manufacturers. And the whole reason why we're concerned about our politicians being invested in stock and, you know, having those huge conflict of interest is the reason on how they're making their decisions. And that scares me. It simply scares me. People are profiting off of what's going on right now, and they're making decisions for those profits. And that's Pete Stauber also.
I want to take some time here and make sure if people are interested in your campaign and want to go up and volunteer for your campaign, once again, your district is massive. And so you're going to need donations just to get around the district, as well as also you're going to need a lot of people to go up there and door knock. If people want to find out more about Ernest Joseph Opegard Peltier III or Joey, well, what's the website people should head to?
EJOP3.com. That's Ernest Joseph Opegard Peltier III, EJOP3.com.
All right. I'll make sure I link.
And we have a huge donate button on there. We have a way to volunteer, sign up. And then we have different ways that you can contribute to the camp within our volunteer tab.
I will make sure I put a links up to all this on social media a little bit later on. Joey, congratulations on running. All my best up there, and thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Oh, hey, thank you for the time, and thank you for the space. My sister's up next in the following show, so give her a big old shout-out. That's Gina Peltier going on Native Roots Radio.
Of course, that's Native Roots Radio. If you're not listening, 6 o'clock here, it's an absolutely sensational show. 6 o'clock here with the I Am Awake crew. So make sure you're just staying with us throughout the afternoon here. Ernest Joseph Opegard Peltier III. Joey, thank you very much. We appreciate the time. We'll take
a
break.
Bridge, Matt.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Voice of Minnesota, it's the Matt McNeil Show. Thank you very much to Joey there for stopping on by. Like I said, we'll link to that, spotlight that interview as well as Democrat of the Day. Patrick, you know, I was in the military. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. U.S. Army. I'm very proud of that service, man. I'm very proud of that. Let me see if I can run through the ranks here. If I can remember. Private. Private first class, corporal or specialist. There's a lot of them are specialists now. There's sergeant, staff sergeant, sergeant first class, sergeant major, first sergeant, lieutenant, second lieutenant, lieutenant, captain, major, lieutenant colonel, colonel. Then there's the four generals. And here's a great way to remember the four generals. Be my little general. Be brigadier general, that's one star. My major general, that's two stars. L, lieutenant general, that's three stars. General is just four-star general, right? There you go. Be my little general. You know, there's not a rank called lieutenant corporal. Even saying that sounds stupid. If I give you a hint there, take a guess what Republican politician said she spoke to the mother of a lieutenant corporal. That would be indeed Lauren Boebert. Yes, the idiot. After I spoke with our 13 fallen military heroes at the State of the Union address, a few of their parents reached out to thank me for recognizing them. One of these parents encouraged me to share this message. She said it was a lieutenant corporal. Now, could she mean lieutenant colonel? Maybe, but lieutenant colonel's mom would not be a young lady, and I can't imagine the lieutenant colonel would want his mom calling up Lauren Boebert. I don't know. Could it be just a corporal? Sure, but where did the lieutenant? There's no lieutenant in the non-commissioned officer ranks. There just isn't. So lieutenant corporal, part of the gazpacho police. God, you Republicans elected these guys. They are seriously, they're stupid morons. They're the person that sits there and will say to you, and that'd be awesome. What? Maybe if I put this knife in my leg. And you look at them and you're like, oh, don't do that. That's not awesome. That'd be awesome. I'd be a tough guy if I did that. Ow! And you guys said, I like the spit on that vinegar. Let's nominate her for a position within the federal government. Wow. Lieutenant Corporal. Well, one thing I don't have to make up is Lauren Boebert's a dumbass. Let's just put it that way. She is. And she's your Republican Party. That's what you guys are now. That. Because you know what? If we were Democrats and we had someone that bad in our party, we would demand that they leave. And we do. And you guys just kind of look down at the dirt in front of you and kick the dirt around with your foot and say, gee willikers, it's not that I endorse what she does. It's just, I don't think we have the authority to tell her she can't be part of the, I don't like that. Nope. This is, you guys created districts where basically a turnip with an R next to its name could win. Louis Gohmert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gozer, Lauren Boebert, you guys created this. And then when the public says, okay, a turnip sounds way too smart for us, let's go with Lauren Boebert, then you actually have the audacity to say, well, I didn't see that coming. Lieutenant Corporal. Do I salute? Do I attention? I have no. Okay. Just stop talking, Lauren. You're an idiot. You're an idiot. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. More hate in the schools. I got two more stories I got to talk about when we come back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. You're Lieutenant Corporal of Love right here. Salute.
We got a call from during break that the caller thinks she was learning her military ranks from MASH because I think he said Hawkeye Pierce got promoted into like a fictional position. So we could be part of the officers club, and he thinks that's where she's learning her military ranks from, is a fictional TV show.
Was that a call from a sergeant corporal? Sergeant corporal is always outranks the general private. Well, we shouldn't talk about the general privates. 952-946. Sorry. The major general privates, though, all day long, I ain't talking about them. All right. So we have gone back and forth on the saga of New Prague schools, where now, if you remember, there was one game where you came on out, and apparently there was racist comments coming from the stands, as well as also some inappropriate comments from a team member. Then another school came out and said that happened to them, and there was, I think, another school that came out that said that happened to them. It might have been a different school, but needless to say, they had problems. And then they basically had, just during the state high school hockey tournament, a few of their students put the white power symbol down on live TV to just put the cherry on top of that little racist sundae out there. So they clearly have a lot of problems. And I am going to repeat the same thing I did when I went off on Minnetonka when they had their problems. It's not... The racism stuff, unfortunately, happens everywhere. What makes it a story or doesn't make it a story is how the school deals with it. And if you quickly let the victims know, you know what, we're on your side, you're in a safe environment, the people that are you know, had committed the problem are you know, they're reprimanded correctly, and there's an appropriate punishment for the crime, and you basically, you know, put out, you know, a reminder to everyone of what you're going to do, you know, there you go. And I've said, you know, this stuff happens all the time, and we don't hear about it because the school district does a pretty decent job of dealing with it. It's when you try to sweep this crap under the rug that it turns into an absolute nightmare. And so my suggestion for you and for every school district is just come on out and realize, you know, it's time to wake up and you've got to fix this stuff. And yeah, that might mean there's going to be some racist parents that come to you like, it's always been like that. We've always been the power race. Why are you taking the sides of the cancel culture? You know, you're going to get that. And you just tell them to F off. I mean, you tell them, blank you, go away, you're the problem, not the solution. Ta-da! It's that simple. It takes courage. It takes a spine. It takes looking out for all the kids that are there, including the kids that might come from a different school that are in your school for a sporting event. Let me tell you how you don't do it. The head of New Prague School District said Monday that an investigation couldn't substantiate allegations that its fans made loud monkey noises at a high school girls' basketball game on February 15th while hosting Robbinsdale Cooper. Announcement of the findings was met with disappointment and disbelief from Robbinsdale School District Superintendent, who accused New Prague officials of dismissing the taunting that students and staffers say was directed at Robbinsdale team, which includes athletes of color. In a letter, the New Prague Superintendent Tim Ditburner told staff and students' family that the independent investigation commissioned by the district looked into the allegations and interviewed roughly 20 people who were present, and that loud monkey noises directed at the opposing team could not be substantiated. Now, note, he's not saying that they didn't happen. It's just saying that we couldn't find enough people to say that they did definitively happen to do anything. Dude, come on, man. Come on. If you're trying really hard to say nothing happened here, if that it couldn't be substantiated, that's, you know, wow, you are really kind of splitting hairs, trying your desperate, well, I couldn't get a third or a fourth person to say something had happened. I'll get back to that here in a second. Dittmer says those interviewed included New Prague students, parents, and employees, along with one person from the Robbinsdale district. Not only did no one interviewed say they heard monkey noises directed at Cooper's team, did they hear monkey noises at all? I mean, that's the question, is that you're saying, well, they didn't hear monkey noises directed at the team, but are they saying they heard monkey noises? Dittmer wrote in his letter, on the night of the game, no one, including coaches, fans, and players from the opposing team and the game officials, reported hearing monkey noises to the district. The district only learned of the allegation through social media posts made after the game had ended. Well, okay, can I just point this out? First of all, if you haven't written a letter in triplicate to my superior is not basically the answer you're looking for. And may I ask, I mean, do you really think kids are like, oh my God, they're making racist comments to me. You know what I need to do? I need to talk to the district. Come on. No, kids are going to do what they do. So you're just trying your hardest at this point to say, well, you didn't fill out the forms in triplicate when you needed to, and henceforth, just because you put it up on TikTok doesn't mean it matters. No, it does. In response Monday afternoon, Robbinsdale Superintendent David Engstrom repeated in a statement that he had said a week after the game, we believe in the first person statements made that they made about the incident, and we believe the team did experience racist taunts and jeers from the New Prague crowd. Now, once again, this is not one person. This is not one team. I'll get to that here as well in a second. Engstrom added that his districts refused to subject our student-athletes and additional staff members to questioning by their investigators, a process that would have forced students and staff to relive the traumatic experience. Engstrom on Monday went on to affirm the district's decision to not compete with athletics and any New Prague teams for the foreseeable future. Dittmer's letter included possible explanations for what led to the accusations, which were investigated by the Minneapolis law firm of Rupp Anderson, Squires, and Waldsberger, a firm that specializes in providing legal counsel to schools and municipalities. While the repeated low-pitched noise is audible for approximately 10 seconds in the video of the game, what that noise is could not be determined. So they're saying there's someone making a noise. They're saying that they can't definitively say it was someone making a noise. I see. But there is the noise there on the tape. There is a noise. In addition, the identity of the noise cannot be determined, although the noise appears to be made by only one individual. Oh, so you only had one racist in the stands. Oh, okay. I guess that's comforting. But, I mean, it's like, come on, man. You have enough evidence. I mean, if I was a school superintendent, I'd say, okay, this seems like enough evidence to me that there's something happened. The allegation that the New Prague fan yelled out monkey while the player was an opposing team was shooting a free throw was not substantiated. The word yelled out during that particular free throw was Nike. The name of a play called by the coach of the New Prague team was supposed to run following the free throw. Now, you want to know the truth is, that to a point I might be able to believe, but it's the fact that you guys seem to be covering up what sounds like it sounds like you guys got some problems on there. And the mishearing of the word monkey, when it was actually Nike, might be something that would be explainable. But the rest of it here just seems like, you know, how big of a rug are you trying to sweep this under at this point? The superintendent noted the New Prague district had not provided a full report to Robbinsdale school officials, and they haven't asked for it. Well, that's nice of you. Dittmer also wrote that the investigators' findings do not take away from the other incidents that have happened at the high school. Ah, okay. Also on February 15th, in a game in the New Prague Community Center, the St. Louis Park High School boys hockey team was subjected to racist taunts while playing New Prague Senior High School. St. Louis Park Athletes Director Andrew Ewald emailed his counterpart at New Prague, Brad Skogerby, saying his team won't play New Prague at least the rest of the school year. The ban will continue until the harm that is caused by and is repaired, and they are assured that there are stakeholders, most important our students, will not be victimized by racism at any New Prague stakeholder in the future. Ewald cited in his letter separate alleged racist incidents experienced by student athletes from other districts. Dittberger spelled out in his letter on Monday that the plan he presented to the New Prague School Board on February 20th to address the school culture so these incidents won't happen again, create a school climate task force to address district needs that will provide an inclusive environment for all students, provide professional development and resources to staff to implement best practices to eliminate harmful behavior, work with student leaders to raise awareness about appropriate conduct, bullying, race, and other issues. I can tell you right now one thing that's going to happen at every future New Prague game. I don't care what it is. Baseball, softball, basketball, football. There are going to be so many cameras running because they're going to want to catch you New Prague racists making bad comments or flashing the white power okay sign. They're desperately going to want to do that. And if it does happen, good luck. I hope you clean this up because this is still a huge mess. You still have two schools that are not in your own conference that don't want to even play you anymore. And the reality is your mentality seems to be, well, we couldn't find anyone who could substantiate the racist taunt, so I guess it didn't happen. And once again, they flashed the white power okay signal. And like I said, it's not one school. It's one incident. It's not one athlete. It's a lot of people. And then your dumb clown kids do the white power hand gesture on television during the state hockey game. What are you doing? What are you doing? When the question, the students did not understand what the signal meant. Sure, of course not, because that's what every kid does is reach down as low as they can and do the okay sign. It's like, are you sure the kids didn't know what you were doing? Or did you look at the kids and say, hey, kids, you didn't really know what you were doing, did you? Because I don't quite know. I'm not buying this report from New Prague. I'm not. Because it's, like I said, it seems to be written from the mentality of we're going to prove that there was no racism. Once again, even though multiple schools, even though multiple students, even though multiple incidences, in the one case you have video evidence of it. Come on. This did not, clear your school. This did not, what it did do, and let me make sure we understand what this report does do, is it gives the racists and the white power freaks that are down in New Prague the ability to say, they looked into it, those black people are just getting uppity. And that's what they're going to do. That is what they're going to do. We can't stand those cancel culture liberal hacks coming down here anyway. This is not us. We looked into it. They couldn't find any evidence. Trust me, I lived in the South for 2 years. I lived in rural Georgia as a kid. Trust me, that mentality, that phrase right there, well, they couldn't prove it, is something you heard over and over and over again with some half-toothless, witless moron grinning the entire time they said it. Yeah, well, they can't prove that I did that. Because down there, when a white person is caught doing something like that, the rest of the white population has a tendency of clamming up. And even though that there might be 100 black people who witnessed the bad behavior, they don't count those people. They will basically only count the white people. And they'll say, well, from our investigation, we couldn't determine it. There wasn't subsequent evidence to prove this. Even though every black person is like, they said it. I've got it here. I've got it on camera now. Well, I don't need to hear that. Let's just say we've learned our lesson and we'll move on. That's kind of their mentality. And so the whole point of this report was to sweep this incident aside, say, no, that's not us. Well, I'm sorry. And yeah, it's unfortunate. Your school district and your town is going through the ringer. But you guys got to clean this crap up. You got to clean this crap up. It was like the racetrack guy down in Southern Iowa that had the racist guy announcer there and said, I stand by him 100%. And then, of course, they lost every sponsor they had. What we really mean is we don't tolerate racism. Oh, not really, huh? There's going to be consequences for your actions. And the reality is that the whole point of this is that not just to appease their local parents and local groups. They want to look at the rest of the metro area and say, see, we did our due diligence. No, you didn't. And the reality is that you guys are going to get every bit of grief you deserve until you take this seriously and you clean up your damn act. And that means really some apologies, a lot of apologies, and a lot of acquiescing, and a lot of I'm sorries. And a lot of, and if I may, New Prague, a lot of you guys shutting up and allowing minority groups to come into your school and tell you what racism is, because you clearly don't have a freaking clue down there. 952-946-6205, 956-6205. We'll take a break, come on back. Another incident. Oh, God. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Oh, let me put these crystal white legs up for the camera. Oh, look at that, huh? Sexy. Oh, yeah. Who likes porcelain? Oh, yes. Just delicious, like a large glass of whole milk. It's disturbing. It's the Matt McNeil Show. That's going to be the new t-shirt. Matt McNeil Show, it's disturbing. The MASH episode that people are talking about, apparently it's the episode where Radar O'Reilly gets promoted to corporal captain to get in the officers club. I actually remember that episode too. Hawkeye promotes him. But that's not lieutenant corporal. I mean, I'm guessing the lieutenant corporal would rank a little bit lower than the corporal captain. I mean, just on the whole made up military rank thing. Thanks, Lauren Bulbert. It is disturbing. The Matt McNeil Show. It's disturbing. 952-946-6205. More than 100 protesters at the high school were in Becker Monday chanted messages supporting the LGBTQ community and turned their backs on school board presenters who shared the other side of recent conversations on equity. The school board, for some freaking unexplainable moment, decided to invite the Child Protection League to speak at a special meeting following outrage from some community racist jackasses when the Out Front Minnesota, an organization supporting lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights, presented at the August meeting. So, once again, on one side, you have a group coming into the school board to talk about equity, and that's okay, but because bigots got upset, they decided they had to bring in someone who was going to talk about not equity, to limit people, to create a subclass of humans. That was what your idea was. Wow, Becker, you guys are a bunch of idiots. The Child Protection League describes itself as an organization committed to protecting children and exploitation and indoctrination. Barb Anderson helped form the group along with Parents Action League, which is designated as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. But hey, Becker wanted them to wanted that hate group to come up and speak to them. GLAAD also lists Anderson in the anti-watch list for saying LGBTQ anti-bullying efforts are a Pied Piper for perversion and affirmed sexual disorders. Yeah. Bigots. Anderson was not at Monday's meeting, but Child Protection League board chair Julie Quist spoke out about children's books she said violated the beliefs and norms of the community by accepting different gender identities. That's right. Looks like we're heading for a good book burning. Also speaking were former Becker board member Betsy Armstrong and Chris Klippin. Armstrong also referenced the Bible quote that says God created two. Okay, let me explain something to you. If your version of Christianity includes hate in any way, shape, or form, you suck at Christianity. I'm just letting you know. Jesus, the guy that made Christians, were that guy, never once condemned gay people, lesbians, boom. And thanks to John Fugelsang, I know nowhere in the Bible are lesbians condemned. Not a single place. Nope. And if you're going to point to Leviticus to justify your hating on gay people, trust me, you want to read Leviticus before you start using that as a weapon. Holy God, did you have a bratwurst today? Got funny news for you. Are you wearing all cotton? No? Funny news. Hey, is that your brother's sister? No, your brother's wife? Because sister. It's like a whole family tree, like a wreath thing. Needless to say, you should read Leviticus. It's a hoot. They came on out. They were Bible. They decided to desecrate Christianity by trying to use it to justify their hate. Yeah, just a horrible bunch of people. Use the new name and preferred pronouns should be an opinion of those interacting with LGBTQ people, Armstrong said. Joe Rand, an educator with the University of Minnesota Extension and a part-time Becker district employee, said members of the school's Gender and Sexual Alliance have been advocating for LGBTQ rights for more than a year, with little progress. Last April, students walked out of school after a spate of bullying and physical confrontations between students based on race and sexual orientation. Heather Abrahamson, a GSA advisor and social studies teacher, said she asked district leaders last summer for more staff training on LGBTQ issues and equity. The Outfront Minnesota presentation was supposed to be an opportunity to train staff. Instead, became a public community event with the board. We were having trouble helping people understand that there aren't two sides to this. It's a protected class of people, that law, and there aren't two sides to human rights, said Rand. But apparently the idiots on the Becker School Board don't understand that. District administrators declined to comment on the Child Protection League's visit, but board chair Mark Swanson read a statement ahead of Monday's meeting acknowledging concerns over the speakers. As a school board, we recognize there are learners, we just like the students we serve. Therefore, the critical part of our job as board members to listen and engage. We see that. So are the Nazis want to speak at the Becker School Board? You're going to say, hey, you know what? I don't like you guys, but we got to let them come in and speak. God, you guys are idiots at Becker. Public comment was not allowed this meeting, but Swanson told attendees they could sign up and speak in the next regularly scheduled meeting. Apparently, a lot of kids showed up and screamed them down. After the presentation, Rand told students, that was all garbage. You are all valid. And so there are some allies of humanity up in Becker. But I got to question the entire concept of bowing down to the bigots in Becker. Bowing down to the bigots. Because the bigots, you know, they got a point of view too. Yeah, hate, and in some of them, want to execute gay people. I don't think that's kind of a mentality that you want to put forward. But hey, in Becker, stupidity reigns on that school board. What the hell are you morons doing? Seriously, what the hell are you doing up there? Hour two of the show is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Patrick here now. Brett, you know, I had hip replacement back in October, right?
Exactly, yes.
You see, Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, the wrestler, died having hip replacement surgery.
Yeah, very sad.
Oh,
I heard about
well,
that yesterday.
He was not having an easy life.
No, he turned his life around over the past decade or so, but yeah, prior to like 2010, yeah, he had a lot of issues going on with addiction, among other things.
Who is the guy that was tagged with when the tag team?
Oh,
the
NW, Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash. Yeah. Hall and Nash. You know, he was that was a great team, and I know Hall has basically that Nash came out and really was his big supporter. And as a matter of fact, I think he was the first one that came out and informed everyone he'd passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that would have been a standard hip replacement for a professional wrestler in his 60s.
No, and considering that you come from that era where you're wrestling every single night of the week, your body has taken a beating over the years. And you're right. It probably was not a typical hip replacement surgery.
My hip replacement surgery has gone well, although today, a little humility, a smidge of humility. I'm at the gym, and I'm weight training, and I'm, you know, and by the way, just a quick side point, because last year was the entire year my entire body just gave up on me, and I've come back from it, and thank God I have, but I actually, one of the lesser things that I did is I actually hurt my shoulders really bad pulling the damn boat off the dock, because remember, the water levels up north were all so dang low because it was so dry. I had to pull the boat off the dock, and I, you know, kind of damaged my shoulder. So I've been working on that, and I've been given these new exercises. And so my physical therapist says, I want you to go do this exercise. And that requires me to lay down on a bench. All right. So I'm laying down on a bench. I all of a sudden realized, how am I getting up from this bench? So I decide I'm going to throw my legs back and throw my legs forward and hopefully not launch myself into the mirror where the weight machines are. I do it. I almost get up. I get close. And then I fall back down. I'm like, oh, it's going to be one of those weebles wobbles, but they don't fall down sort of things. So I throw my legs back. I do it again. And I, for some reason, didn't throw my legs straight forward, but kind of the side. And I proceeded to launch myself off the bench. And there is nothing better than having some 20-year-old, hey, old fella, you okay? You're like, Jesus, really?
Yeah,
really?
Just to rub it in, right?
Yeah, I was like, are you okay? Do we need to call this or should I hit the medical emergency? No, I'm fine. I'm just an idiot. I'm being described. I need to do this exercise at the beginning of my workout as opposed to the end of my workout because I have no muscle strength left to even get myself off a bench. So, but now if you've ever seen a 53-year-old man flail, oh, that's just delightful. Like a big muskie just out of the water flopping around on the dock.
Now, you could have done the tuck and roll style and just rolled off the bench instead.
The problem is like, okay, do I roll to the side? But this is a narrow bench. I'm a wide guy. I've got big shoulders. So the bench is underneath me. So my side would be, okay, I'll just get on my side and then I'll just kind of push myself up gently. Look at me. I'm sitting upright. Look at me. I don't need help from anyone. Look at me. Nope. That wasn't an option. So there was like, okay, so... If falling actually did cross my mind. I was like, man, I just roll off the side here.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm off. There we go. Ta-da. See what I did? Yeah. The other guy, he was watching me the entire time just to make sure I was having the beginnings of an episode. Mm. You know, just he was watching. You okay? All right. Prepare to run to my side. Any other exercise? I'm fine. Thank you. All right.
Yeah, that had to have been a fun moment.
I got to figure out how to get off a bench. I got to do that exercise again.
You're right, though. The worst thing is, the 20-year-old guy coming over.
Hey there, Brill Cream, I don't need your help, okay? The fact that I just called you Brill Cream makes me 53. Never mind. Even if I was 73, that would be a data reference. So, yeah, I'll just accept my fate at this point. One other story for you today. Police say a woman left a path of destruction in a Twin Cities Target. This morning. Okay. Throwing items and damaging products throughout the store. The woman entered the West St. Paul Target at 1750 Robert Street just before 9:45, according to the city's police department, with a 911 call reporting she was trashing the store. The woman was reportedly walking through the store and seemingly at random throwing and damaging products. At one point, she even used golf clubs to smash items and fixtures throughout the Target. Managers at the location, worried about their customers and staff safety, began evacuating the store. When police arrived, they found the woman in electronics, still actively damaging property. Officers arrested her. She is in the process of being booked into Dakota County Jail. I'm guessing a Walmart fan. According to the West St. Paul Police Department, she could face felony criminal death. I would hope she would face felony. You got cameras all over the place. Yeah. This is not going to exactly be a Matlock episode, I don't think. Is that you entering the store? Is that you taking a golf club? Is that you with the new Sony 57-inch wide TV there? Oh, there it is. There, okay. Suspect's reason for the outburst is unknown at the time. I would love to know why. I'm going to guess a mental episode of some sort.
That, or I was thinking there had to have been some substances in her body that was affecting judgment.
Okay, so, clearly needing help. Maybe, a mental episode could be the case. Bath salts is always there.
Yeah,
it could be, that's the alternate, things, drugs. Or, is it just, could it be someone who's like ex worked there and just... That was it. That they found them out. They were sneaking out across town, and decided they were going to take it off on their place of employment because that's happened before. Usually, it's not a Target though. It might be like a restaurant or an auto shop place, a smaller mom and pop place, not a major store. Because I can tell you right now, Target's lawyers are lining up for this one.
Well, she was doing this for a long period of time. If that's a disgruntled employee, I would think like maybe after a minute or two, your rage would start to go down a little bit and you would realize, what am I doing? But yeah, it sounded like she was doing this for quite a bit of time.
Would you try to intervene? Hey there, lady. Are you okay? Why are you taking it out on the Martha Stewart pillows over there? I
if she had a golf club, I wouldn't.
I mean,
she could swing that thing and probably whack you pretty good with that thing.
I keep thinking about in the movie Oh Brother, We're Out There. It's like, don't shoot the livestock. Don't take out the microwaves. What are you doing over there? Those are quality microwaves. They can make you popcorn. You know, it depends on if she had like a path. Hmm. I mean, if there was like specific things she was going for, she's going, yeah, this is going to be pricey. How many TVs, I mean, computers or anything like that she breaks? How many, I mean, she got to electronics.
Yeah, that's the dangerous part right there, where she's doing a lot of damage in the electronics section.
Could you get over $100,000? Yeah, I bet you she's over $100,000 for the damage.
Oh, easily. Yeah. From the physical damage to the store, the electronics, yeah.
The golf clubs. Got to remember, the golf clubs are probably not – they're going to be marked down. I mean, if you're looking for a good, cheap set of golf clubs right now, I know a place where you can go get some. You know, it might be a little breezy in the store at this point. But so the West St. Paul – I'm not sure if they reopened the West St. Paul Target, but just FYI, if you're there and it's not open – now you know. The more you know.
Oh, and the employees that have to clean that up have to be real thrilled with her.
Yeah, not like they're already so appreciated as a Target employee. So appreciated. You can see it in their faces every time I go in there. Every single time.
Yeah, they got to clean up after her.
It's not as bad as an Amazon worker, but still, it's not exactly the top of the rung of the ladder there. You, of course, got our good friends from the Minnesota Reformer on with you, Patrick Coolican, right?
Patrick Coolican. We are indeed talking to him about how this Minneapolis police officer, who, of course, was involved in the beating of Jaleel Stallings, is now going to be getting a $190,000 workers' comp settlement. So we'll be talking about that and, well, the major financial situation Minneapolis is going to be facing with all of these settlements they're going to be getting through workers' comp. So we talk about that, and then Mayor Fry also trying to finally ban no-knock warrants.
Once again, that's the Minneapolis police telling all the people that were on the Stallings tape to get out of the way, because eventually they're going to have to do something. And so they're all running. Rats are abandoning the ship and trying to take as much money as they can for beating people in the streets. Unbelievable. All right. Well, here you go. Not all the news is good news. Minnesota Reformer Patrick Coolican with Brett right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. Right now, we're joined by Patrick Coolican. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource to find the latest in Minnesota news and politics over at MinnesotaReformer.com. As we have a couple of stories we'll be talking about today in the city of Minneapolis, and we might talk a little bit, too, about what's happening in the special election in the 1st Congressional District. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Good to hear from you.
Good to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start off in the city of Minneapolis, as this is a piece Dina Winter wrote today. Minneapolis police officer Corey Taylor was on a SWAT team that drove around in an unmarked van firing rubber bullets at people without warning 5 days after the police murder of George Floyd. The officers wound up severely beating Jaleel Stallings and Virgil Lee Jackson Jr. And I bring this up because now the officer, Corey Taylor, is going to be getting a $190,000 workers' compensation settlement from the city of Minneapolis. Now, before we dive into the idea of him getting that workers' comp settlement and why he's able to get that money, let's back up a little bit. And I want to ask you, Patrick, what exactly was the role that Taylor played in the SWAT team that night when they Stallings and Jackson, and what actions did Taylor take against both of them, and specifically Jackson?
So he was in the van. It's an unmarked white van. They're driving around, and they're shooting these rubber bullets at people who are out after curfew. Stallings thought that he was hit with a real bullet, and he fired back. And that's how the crisis kind of erupts. The officer... And this officer in particular is supposed to be covering with his rifle. They all jump out of the van, and he participates in the, I think it's on video, so we'll call it a beating of Mr. Jackson. They spent about a couple minutes beating and tasing him and telling him to comply, even though when they ran over there, he was already on his knees, on his hands, on his head. So there was no resistance there. He had not fired. He was literally just a bystander. His only crime was being out after curfew. And so that is now under investigation. The entire incident is under investigation by state and federal authorities, which we broke a couple of weeks ago. And at the same time, we have all of this workers' comp claims being made. So it's an interesting juxtaposition of two different threads of reporting that Dean has been doing for last 6 or 9 months.
Well, $190,000 seems like a lot that they're going to be paying to this officer, Corey Taylor, considering that, well, Jaleel Stallings was acquitted of basically any wrongdoing in the incident, and there's very damning video of what happened with the SWAT team that is available, and I know you guys helped break over at the Reformer. And now, of course, as you mentioned, the incident is being investigated by state and local authorities. So in light of those facts, why exactly did the city council approve that payment to Taylor? Can we go into more detail about that?
Sure. I mean, there's privacy laws that don't allow us to know exactly what the workers' comp claim is. But I can tell you that, and so we don't have access to that information, but I can tell you that we've been reporting on in the aggregate, there's been a lot of these cases, workers' comp, as well as disability retirements that are being claimed by Minneapolis police in particular since the George Floyd police killing. And the thinking on the count with the city attorney is you should just settle these cases rather than try to take them to court, where if you lose, the stakes are pretty high. You end up losing all the back pay for all those years, plus health care in perpetuity, which is really expensive over time. So they're settling these. And so that's one of the reasons why the Minneapolis police force has shrunk so much, because all these claims that have been made since June of 2020.
And I think the attorney does have a point that if you do drag this thing out in the court system, it could end up costing the city a lot of money. But then on the other hand, as you mentioned, with so many workers' comp claims coming through the city right now, it really does put a pretty big strain on the city's budget right now. And I imagine that's got to be raising the concern for members of the city council and also, well, residents in general of Minneapolis that, well, they look and see, well, we're paying $190,000 to this $190,000 to this officer. But yet again, we could be paying even more if we try to fight these things. So it does put the city in kind of a tough position where they have so many people leaving and they're going to end up with these massive workers' comp payments. But then again, if they try to fight that in the court system, they could end up paying even more.
Yeah, they're in a difficult situation. And the city is also self-insured. So what that means is it's not like there's an insurance company that's paying out these claims. It's just the city taxpayers who are doing it directly. So it's not an enviable position for city leadership.
Has there been a response at all from members of the city council raising concerns about this, about these payments that have been going out?
They have. I believe council member Ellison and I think one of the newer council members as well, Jason Chavez, I think. But for the most part, other than voicing some concerns about it, you're not going to get. I don't think any kind of momentum to decline on these because, again, the risk of losing in court.
Staying in Minneapolis now, let's go to an article that I know was written by Max Nesterak, and this has to do with, well, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey announcing yesterday that he plans to ban all no-knock warrants in the city of Minneapolis. The announcement comes more than a month after a Minneapolis police officer shot and killed 22-year-old Amir Locke when executing a no-knock warrant, even though Locke was not the subject of that no-knock warrant. So what exactly does Frey's proposal do with no-knock warrants and really other types of search warrants that could be executed by the Minneapolis Police Department?
So he wants to ban them all, these no-knock warrants, and it would extend to other jurisdictions for Minneapolis police, as well as Minneapolis police executing for them for other agencies in the city. So no more no-knock warrants. And then also there'd be new rules on all search warrants So there would be a 20-second wait after you knock and enter a home during the daytime, and then 30 seconds at night. And this is, I think, considered important because in the Locke case, I think it was 10 seconds. He was dead by the time they put the they opened the door to the time that they shot Locke. So they're trying to create fewer of these kind of high risk situations. The devil will be in the details because at this point it's just a proposal. It gets sent over to apparently the police department will actually write the policy, and we'll have to see what kind of exceptions there could be and how the policy is written.
Yeah, you were kind of alluding to this, but I'm curious what happens next in the process. Is Fry allowed to implement this unilaterally, or does the city council get input? I know you were saying the police are going to be involved in potentially writing this policy as well, which could raise some red flags for many folks within the city. Talk about what is the next step in the process of getting this implemented.
So in Minneapolis, the mayor does have complete authority over the police department, so the city council, as much as they've tried to wade into police policy in recent years, it's pretty clear in the charter that ultimately this is the mayor's authority, and so he gets to just implement this. I think the thought is that he put this out there to try to get support in the city before it actually becomes the policy. Of course, what really matters is are officers complying with it. I think that's it remains to be seen, given what we saw from the audit last week that came out about the events following George Floyd's murder, when it just seemed like there was a lot of chaos in how government was operating.
Yeah.
City government, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. Fry was certainly the subject of criticism in that report last week that I know you guys reported on over at The Reformer. And I wonder if the response to what Fry is proposing now could be seen as maybe too little too late, especially when, last year during the campaign season, Fry promised that he was going to ban no-knock warrants, and that didn't happen. So curious what the response could be in the city right now, being that we had that pretty brutal audit report that was released last week, and then that campaign promise from last year, which wasn't executed at least until potentially this year.
Yeah, the issue of no-knock warrants has become very difficult for him this year because it did seem that his campaign's language, as he said, became more casual and didn't reflect the necessary precision or nuance of the policy change. So they made the promise that they had gotten rid of no-knock warrants. They clearly really had not. And then Mr. Locke was killed. So it's been a real serious problem for him. I suspect has created a lot of skepticism about the new policy.
Speaking with Patrick Coulican, editor-in-chief over at the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to their website, minnesotareformer.com, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Let's move out of the city of Minneapolis and head down to southern Minnesota with the first congressional district election. They have a special election coming up in August to replace the late Jim Hagedorn, who passed away a few weeks ago. And one of the big names that will be entering the race on the Republican side is Jennifer Carnahan, who was the wife of Hagedorn, as Carnahan has announced that bid in CD1. Carnahan does have a checkered past, though, with allegations that she created a toxic work environment, and then, of course, her ties to Tony Lazzaro, who is on trial for attempted sex trafficking of a minor, among other charges. So I guess I want your sense on this, Patrick. How much might her past hinder her chances in that race? Because I go back to what you and I talked about last week with, for example, Corey Heppala, and how sometimes it's easy to get caught in your own bubble, whether it's a media bubble or a political bubble, and you might not be quite as well known as you originally think. And I wonder if the residents in CD1 might not know much about Jennifer Carnahan other than the fact that she was Jim Hagedorn's wife. So I'm curious what your take is on how much her past might come back to hurt her in that race.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I have any kind of polling or anything, but I think you've asked the right question. A source of mine pointed out this headline on Friday in Politico. This is House GOP winces as Hagedorn's scandal-plagued widow eyes his empty seat. Not the kind of headline that you want and in the days leading up to your campaign announcement. And my response was, well, how many voters in the first are reading? Are reading Politico on Friday morning? How widespread is it known? And then also, how well known is this history with, the first step is going to be a convention endorsement. So, how does she probably knows a lot of these convention goers from her time in party politics. She was at times kind of polarizing, but she did get reelected to party chair only 6 months before, or even very, very close to the time that she was forced to resign. Does she carry that goodwill over into the convention, the goodwill for her husband? Does that carry over? Does someone try to challenge her in the primary, where you're going to have a bigger, a much larger pool of voters, people who have less information, and so how do they? I mean, what do they know about Jennifer Carnahan, as opposed to other than the fact that she's the widow of Jim Hagedorn? These are all unanswered questions. I do think that if she is the nominee, it's the only way that the DFL has a shot at that race. And I think that the former CEO of Hormel, Jeff Ettinger, has announced his intention to run. I think he's a strong candidate against Carnahan.
Yeah, I know Richard Painter is also in that race as well, who is at least well-known among in political circles as being a former member of the Bush administration, who has now gone on to criticize President Donald Trump. So the DFL will certainly have an interesting race on their hands as well. But I want to go to the last line of the article that you guys have talking about Carnahan entering the race, and I'll just read it verbatim. A campaign spokesperson said, "Carnahan, who has previously lived in St. Louis Park, lives in Blue Earth." And I bring this up because I think of the idea of carpetbagging and having someone that maybe doesn't live in the district try to run too well, represent a district. That idea of carpetbagging kind of does play in rural districts, so I wonder if that could be a line of attack that might be used against Carnahan, not only by the DFL, but maybe even her other potential challengers for the Republican nomination, because that does play, I think, the idea that, well, someone is trying to run in a rural district and they don't really live there or don't really have many ties.
Right. I mean, legally, she doesn't have to live there, but she is registered to vote there. I mean, it was a strong inference that they were keeping two addresses, one in the metro and one down there. I'm not going to besmirch Jennifer Carnahan's Blue Earth bona fides, but you can imagine this kind of line of attack definitely being used in the both Republican primary and then also in the general election.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting race to watch, especially with that tight calendar and the fact that we have a special election in August and then, well, the actual election in November with a primary in there, too. So it's a very busy time down in the 1st Congressional District. Well, you have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Patrick, thanks again for the time today. Always good chatting with you.
Good to be here.
And let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM.
I mentioned when that Stallings tape came on out and the fact that, remember, the Stallings tape came on out a few months after the court case was settled, where basically the Stallings was found not guilty because the body cam footage completely exonerated the guy. But as well, the body cam footage showed the atrocious crimes of the Minneapolis Police Department. And that it was, oh God, just horrible. And I said at that point, You had this body cam footage. Arredondo, the former chief, had this body cam footage for a year. And not only did he not once hold any of those officers accountable, but they still pushed to prosecute and put Stallings in jail for a long time, even though the police knew he had done nothing wrong. That is the epitome of corruption. And I said at that moment, watch, they are going to get every officer that's in that tape and get them out of the way, whether that's going to be I have emotional strain. I need a big settlement from the city. Boo-hoo. The guy beating Stallings in the tape apparently, I guess, hurt his fist whacking it into Stallings, I guess. That he just, it's, you know, they're going to get them all retired. They're going to all transfer, going to be there. And then they come out and it's like, what can we do? Everyone on the tape is gone. 3 years after we finally decided to take it seriously. Well, I guess next time we'll have to do better. This is not how you look like you're reforming the Minneapolis Police Department. This is, remember all those lies. Minneapolis police and Mayor Fry and the city council all said about we don't need to defund the police. We don't need to start from scratch. They'll reform this. And here we are. No reforms in sight. They're going to get Mayor Fry only brings up the no-knock warrants after they murder a guy with a no-knock warrant, which even the St. Paul Police Department did not want Minneapolis to enforce because they know that they can't trust Minneapolis police. I don't see any reforms here. All I see is cover your ass, and that's all I see. That's all I see. And it's just, it is disturbing. And like I said, it's just predictable. I said when the Stallings tape came to light that it was going to be clear that the main goal for the Minneapolis police was to get every officer in that tape out of the line of fire or retired or out of the way and try to prevent them from ever being held accountable for crimes against the city. Defending racism. Dear Lord, God, what a bunch of ugly punks. Ah, man. And you guys are not fixing this. So I'm going to just tell you, next November, get ready for the next ballot question. And one of these times, it's going to pass. One of these times, it is going to pass. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. A few more things to get to before the end of the show. First of all, the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Monday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 483 newly reported cases, 9 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,289. Now, usually on Tuesdays, we have the three-day, wow, 483, that's hardly anyone. But then they came back and they said that the case data that was posted in the 72-hour period ending at 4 a.m., but not all cases from the weekend were able to be included. So the number of new cases is lower than it should be for Tuesday. So it's better, but it's not, it's still not the complete numbers. And, you know, I'm just telling someone today, it was yesterday. We had 13 people die of COVID. And I said, we had 13 people die yesterday of COVID. And they said, in the country? And I said, no, here in Minnesota alone. No, really? Yeah, really? And I said, and that's pretty much every day. No, it's not. I said, we've lost 12,000 people. No, yes. Just talk about the lack of coverage of this stuff. So, once again, 483 and 9 newly reported deaths. The missing cases, by the way, that were not reported will be apparently reported on Wednesday. So expect Wednesday's number to be higher. Minnesota's test positivity rate is now 3.2%. Once again, still well below that community transmission rate of 5%. And so things going in the right direction there. Through March 14th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized was 306. That's actually up from 298 reported on March 13th. Of those hospitalized, 42 people are in intensive care. That's up from 38, and 264 people in non-ICU care. That's up from 260. It's interesting. There are some the countries, Germany, Hong Kong, there are some countries right now where COVID is going crazy. And I'm trying to figure out why. Is it because the concern I have is this something new? And it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's just they were able to stave off Omicron, and finally Omicron's running its course there. But still, it's this. We're not done with this. We are not done with this. And I will be very happy. I'm going to be honest with you. I will probably openly weep on this radio show when we have a week of no deaths. It's what we've known for two freaking years now. I had a friend of mine just posted up on Facebook that, she was one of the first cases of COVID, and she still is struggling with the cases. She was one of the first cases in Minnesota, like the 120th or 140th case in Minnesota. And back then she was talking about it. When she went in, she was showing almost the exact signs for COVID, but because she hadn't checked off every box, they did not want to give her a COVID test. They finally relented, found out she did. They got her into the hospital, but it's been a long recovery process for her. And once again, she still has problems. And I just keep saying to myself, it's like we are just on the very beginning of the long-term consequences of all this, and we have got to keep that in mind. Get vaccinated, please do. As of March 9th, the state reported that 3,887,121 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,673,633 people have completed the vaccine series. There are 2,545,357 Minnesotans who are completely up to date with their booster shot. And now, if you didn't hear the news, sounds like they are going to ask for approval for a fourth shot for the Pfizer. Put it in me. I don't care. I think at this point that all the lies that we were told in regards to it's going to be laser beam lizard people, green blooded, it's going to make you magnetized. I mean, all that's lies. And it's just all lies. 952-946-6205. Another story that we've been covering that got an update on it this week, and didn't have time to get to it yesterday, but I wanted to get to it this afternoon. The Minnesota Senate voted unanimously Monday to require the Legislative Auditor's Office to review the troubled Southwest Light Rail project. The bill, which the House passed 129-1 earlier this month, now goes to the Governor Walz. The governor's office says he supports an audit. The bill, which appropriates $200,000 from the general fund for the audit, also requires the Metropolitan Council to provide status updates on the Southwest project twice a year to legislators. I like to say that, what do I know? People just tell us stuff, said Senator Scott Dibble, the chief sponsor of the Senate bill there. The legislative auditor who can really get up in there, look at the record, consult the expertise, find out the facts, view the communications, really find out what's going on and report with the great detail along with some of the analysis around policy and principle. Dibble and Representative Frank Hornstein, DFL from Minneapolis, Grand Cushing for an independent review of the project this last summer when transit planners trapped an additional $200 million from Hennepin County for cost overruns. Earlier this year, the Met Council, which is building the 14.5-mile line between Minneapolis and Eden Prairie, said construction would cost an additional $450 million to $550 million, bringing the total up to $2.75 billion. The council said complications related to the tunnel in Minneapolis-Cunnelworth area, the addition of a mile-long $93 million crash wall separating light rail and freight trains, and the station in Eden Prairie caused the project's price tag to surge. Now, I want to go through once again all these things. Now, the one that I have no problem with, I'm going to be very blunt, is the mile-long $93 million crash wall, because that to me is kind of one of those things that would come up and it's like, you know what, we are actually a little close. Let's get the real engineers out here to really look at this. All right, out of safety, let's put this crash wall, prevent that from being a bigger problem. All right, that's in my mind, that's one of those additional costs that just kind of happens. The additional station in Eden Prairie, someone authorized that. And whoever that person is, well, grab your checkbook and you can write that check, because that wasn't part of the deal. And I get it. You wanted to make it real pretty at the end and you didn't want to have it just to turn around at the Eden Prairie Mall. You wanted it to go and you go to the park and ride because it was a better location, but they didn't fund it to the park and ride. So you built an additional length, an additional station. That's on you guys. Someone authorized that. That wasn't part of the original deal. They need to be on the hook for that. But it's the Kenilworth Tunnel, which once again, I don't know what happened there, but I really look at the contractor and I say they clearly did due diligence. And I don't think the Met Council did their due diligence in that one either. And what I mean is this, is that I brought up the Lowry Hill Tunnel, 6 lanes wide, goes under Lowry Hill on Interstate 94. It took 3 years, 3 years to build that tunnel. 6 lanes wide. It's basically like a quarter mile long. It's a huge tunnel. And they built it in 6 years. Or excuse me, in 3 years. 3 years. 6 lanes in 3 years. It's going to take you an insane amount of time to build this Kenilworth Tunnel. And I'm going to go back to when this whole concept was being put out there, and I had people call up and said, Matt, they're going to run into a mess out there because a lot of those areas back when they filled them in for building, they just threw anything they could find into those. They're going to come across all sorts of things. And I said, well, that can't possibly be because they're going to do the due diligence and do the soil analysis on what they're digging into, or at least you'd think they would. Since that time, I have talked to 2 people who have contacted me directly and said, indeed, they should have done a full soil analysis on the entire run. And whether they did or not remains to be seen. I will say this. They clearly were not anticipating having to dig through what they're having to dig through, which leads me to believe they, A, didn't do the soil analysis, or B, they just kind of glossed over the soil analysis and said, hey, you know what? It's your standard construction project here. What we're going to do is just tell them, hey, you need to give us more money. So we're not going to really do the due diligence, and now all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, you got to fork it over if you really want this done. Now we got most of it built, so you better pay us. Maybe that was the case. I don't know. I would say this. I was on my community's planning and zoning committee. I would highly recommend you get Parks and Rec, planning and zoning, water. There's a lot of local community councils that you can be part of, and I will tell you, show you a lot about how a community runs. If someone came to us with a project and said, we want to do this, we would have the full schematics. We would have the full analysis, the full impact of this. And they would come in and we would sit down with them and we would ask them questions. Why are you doing this? What does this tell you here? Here is the deal. And we would sign off on this is the deal. They are on the record because we have that. I'm getting the impression the Met Council didn't do their due diligence. And say, wait a second here. We know that that's going to be a mess in the Kenilworth neighborhood. You're saying you can do it cheaper than anyone else. As a matter of fact, you're kind of building it like any other tunnel. Yet we already know you're going to have to use specialized equipment. How is that the case? And I just don't think the Met Council or the contractor who has been honest about what exactly has been going on there. What I'll say is this, is considering how much of a mess this is, I guarantee you that contractor wants to get this job project done as quick as possible. And the Met Council wants, I'm sure there's a lot of people in the Met Council who are all of a sudden now like, oh, we want real answers. Well, you had the chance to get them. Now the rest of the state's going to get them. And this auditor is going to go find. I mean, if you guys didn't do your due diligence, or if you guys just basically put in a bid without understanding what you were going to have to do, just hoping that there would be additional monies afterwards, they're going to find out about it. Julie is in Minneapolis. Let's get her call in before we go to the break. Welcome on in, Julie.
Hi, just a couple of quick comments. It's International, you know, Fair Pay Day for women. I've got a long view of this as an older boomer, and I remember it was about 1979, 1980, women were making 79 cents on the dollar, you know, and compared to men, and now it's 83 cents, so you've come a long time, baby. I just heard a woman that works in the media. She's about 50, and she said she always tries to mentor other women in the media, and they talk, you know, what should I be making? Here's what I make. And so forth. But she said, when I ask men to share what they make, they never do. And she goes, I wonder why. So that's my comment about that. It's a very slow slog. Another interesting thing on a different topic, Matt, is my sister for 35 years had a company in the metro area here dealing with work comp claims. And she mentioned to me that police have a lot of alcoholism problems, and they have a lot of alcoholism type work comp claims. So I just wanted to let you know.
All right. Thank you very much. Julie in Minneapolis, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. One more story before we get into Native Roots Radio and Robert Pilot and crew. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. One final story I want to get to here. And this one's kind of a weird one. A prominent Minneapolis community leader who's currently running for Congress has deleted a tweet that appeared to make light of a child's 2020 drowning. Don Samuels, former city council member of the North Minneapolis, who is now a local activist and CEO for the nonprofit MicroGrants, announced last week he was challenging Representative Ilhan Omar for the 5th Congressional District seat on March 9th. Shortly after news of his decision spread, the vice chair of the Minneapolis DFL, Brianna Rose Lee, who has previously canvassed for Omar, sent out a tweet directed at Samuels. She called him a man with such poor judgment that he literally is the person responsible for a child drowning and dying while he watched from the shore. If you can't trust him to babysit, how can you trust him with an entire district? Lee is referring to a 2020 death of Isaac Childress III, the six-year-old drowned in the Mississippi River off of Boom Island while on a community biking trip with Samuels, his wife Sandra Hollinger Samuels, and four other children. The Sahan Journal actually had coverage of that. Don Samuels on Monday night, 5 days after Lee's tweet, replied in writing, "Can't swim but can govern." Whew. Wow, that's his response. Critics immediately began to question Samuels' response. Samuels walked back his comments and deleted the tweet, but not quite 2 hours after posting it. Writing in a follow-up, he became defensive about remarks about his opponent's staffer about the most devastating days of our lives. He continued, "Twitter isn't the medium for that conversation, and I capably showed why. I'm sorry." Samuels, a Democrat, has focused his early campaign on public safety. Are we... Okay. He says he's a Democrat, but yeah. All right. He's focused his early campaign on public safety. He disagrees with the slogan defund the police, and he says his account in his announcement, and he prefers an approach that embraces both justice and accountability. Samuels is also a vocal opponent of the 2020 ballot question that proposed replacing the Minneapolis Police Department with the Department of Public Safety and went so far as to fight the language and the question in court. When Isaac, and I believe he was, wasn't he part of the lawsuit that, I'm not sure. Was he part of the lawsuit that was appealed yesterday and the ruling came back that the Minneapolis Police didn't have to have their staffing levels back up to that certain level in June? I think he might have been. When Isaac drowned in August of 2020, neither the Samuels were identified publicly as being the two adults at the scene. Both were leading the children on a bike round around the neighborhood when they decided to go to Boom Island. As reported to by Becky Dernbach at the Sahan Journal last fall, the DNR water accident report says inadequate supervision was one of the likely factors in the Isaac's death. Sandra was the only person in the group that swam, but she gave the kids permission to put their feet in the water off of the small island. Neither she nor Dawn asked any parents or guardians if their children could go to the water while on the excursion. Isaac and another child went out too far and was swept up. Sandra jumped in and managed to rescue the one child, but could not get hold of Isaac. According to the report, Dawn, who cannot swim, was stuck watching from the shore. Sandra's insurance company ultimately paid $301,000 to Isaac's family in the wrongful death incident. When that incident was brought up, and I mean, we can, and I'll be the first to say, I'll be the first to say for the case of, who was it? Brianna Rose Lee, who brought that up. I don't know if that's, it's an unfortunate accident. I don't know if that's necessarily political fodder. I don't think that's, I understand. I'm just letting the issues be known. I understand that, but I think I can, I mean, I don't know Don Samuels, but I can make the account. He didn't want a child to die that day. I think that no one wanted that to happen. So I don't know if that's necessarily appropriate, but I can tell you one thing. Don Samuels' response to it, "can't swim but can govern," is about as blithe as you can get on something like that. And I got to tell the truth, if my child was the child that died because they weren't supervised, I'd be pretty livid that he was, you know, kind of trying to dismiss the unfortunate incident by, you know, going down this path. You're entitled to run. I'm not going to deny this. I can tell you right now, Ilhan Omar is going to win. And, you know, she's just that well liked, and she does have a pretty good machine as far as a political organization goes. I'd be shocked if, you know, it got close. Now, that being said, you have the right to run, you have the right to do this. But, yeah, it usually takes – we're in March. It's already this ugly in the race, this and now. I have a hard time imagining where this is going to go afterwards. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a fantastic evening. Back on a Wednesday with Stein. Till then, see ya.